Okay, we are just coming up on the last 3 seconds, so I've stopped the pre-meeting share and I'll go ahead and mute all. And as usual, everybody will have the ability to unmute themselves. Please feel free to do so if you have a comment or question, and remute yourself afterwards so we keep background noise to a minimum. And welcome to all to our Q&A session. If we have any guests with us tonight, just a reminder that we're in the last few days of our two-for-one special, so anybody who joins the group before the end of the month will get 2 years for the price of one. So all you have to do is go to our link at the top of our homepage, join or renew, follow the prompts, and you can pay by check, by snail mail, or you can use PayPal, which would include the ability to use a credit card or a debit card, or you can do an fund transfer. And the end of the public service announcements for now. And so, Alan's got the slide up on the screen there now. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. So, Alan, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Chris. I think we have quite a lot of material tonight, so we'll jump straight in. And last week we were talking about Jitsi and Jitsi Meet, and there was a suggestion that we should run a Jitsi session after the Q&A. And so if you want to try out Jitsi, we are actually going to do that, and you will find that this URL, meet.jit.c, OPCUG post Q&A Jitsi, is the link to the Jitsi meeting, which will start basically at the end of this one. And I'll show this slide right at the end, so, and Chris has posted the URL into the chat, so there's no excuse for not joining us. Okay, hopefully, no excuse, as long as it goes well. It should be fine. It should be fine. Okay, a second follow-up. About a month ago, probably more than a month ago, I talked about Patch My PC and how it's now been renamed for home users as Home Updater. And I said that I had downloaded the new version and run it through VirusTotal and had a problem with a Trojan being reported by some search engine called Zilla. So it was the only one out of, I don't know, 60 or 70, however many search engines, antivirus engines checked out the file. This was the only one that reported there was a problem. So I put a message on the VirusTotal user forum, and you notice it's dated February the 6th, and I basically said, is it a false positive? And nothing happened until March the 22nd, a couple of days ago, when Justin from Patch My PC reported that yes, this is a false positive. So both Stu and I are happy that our download is okay. Okay, moving along, Chris had a follow-up from a user forum posting.
Yeah, so this was an interesting one. I came across quadratic. Everything has to be AI nowadays, and this actually sort of fulfills the fact that it truly is some AI in behind this. So if you use Excel and you work with complex formulas and you're always trying to figure out, what formula will accomplish a particular thing, this could be the thing for you. It'll help you with pivot tables, data visualization, automation, all kinds of things like that. So it's quadratic and it can summarize data, it can generate charts, it can even write Python code for you, which is kind of cool, and I'll show you an example of that, and all within the Excel spreadsheet itself. I should paste that into the chat. There we go. And there's a YouTube video which is really quite a good one, which shows use of the quadratic spreadsheet and how you can effectively use it for a variety of things. And I would like to give credit to Tom. He posted that to the OPCUG member forum. I highly encourage anybody who is not a member of the forum now, sign up for it. All you have to do is send me an email and I'll sign you up. And you don't have to wait for somebody to decide, hey, maybe this will suit Q&A as well. So, of course, they have to generate some money out of this. So there are some advanced features. So you can do a paid account. But everything I did in this demonstration here was done using a free account. And there is a lot you can do with a free account, for sure. So let's step back to February 26th, and I had an Excel problem where I was trying to normalize some phone numbers. And so some phone numbers didn't have area codes, some had the area codes, some of them had dashes, some of them didn't, there were blank cells, and so forth. And I had tried using AI to solve that particular problem. And it worked, but it actually went through an awful lot of steps to do things. So there was my first attempt and a big explanation about what it was actually doing with the AI. And there were more attempts and more attempts and more attempts and so forth. And I finally got to the point where I had my solution. And quite frankly, it was very, very helpful. It accomplished it in about 5 minutes, what probably would have taken me hours to try and figure out the formulas to actually do it. So I consider that to be a success. But then when I came across this quadratic, I thought, well, could quadratic do this for me better? So I went to there, and basically it's an online spreadsheet. And so you can drop in an Excel spreadsheet into it. And then I decided to make the test case even harder than it was in the original. So I changed some of the phone numbers so that they had parentheses around area codes on some of them, and then some of them had spaces instead of hyphens. So there was more variety of the phone numbers that were actually in the data that I presented it. So then I just told it I wanted to normalize phone column. So all phone numbers have an area code. If there is currently no area code, assume 613. Format all the phone numbers so they appear the same. If the area code includes parentheses, remove them. If the digits of the phone numbers are separated by spaces, change the spaces to hyphens. If there's no phone numbers, leave the cell blank. So I just basically told it what I wanted to do with the data. And it came back and, you know, it told me, okay, this is what we're going to do. It read in the existing data, it processed the numbers, it standardized the format, and then it returned the formatted data. And then interestingly, it said it created Python code that actually did the conversion of the data. And it correctly formatted everything in a single try, single attempt, whereas when I was using, the previous attempt, it took about 5 tries to get everything correct. And then it told me that, you know, if I wanted to, like right now, that column that is highlighted with the normalized data, that's actually a formula. So I wanted it to just be plain text. And it told me that, you know, I could copy the data over the other cell. And I thought, well, why should I have to do the work? And so I just told it, copy the normalized values back to column E. And it did it perfectly. So I was pretty impressed. It was very, very good. It gave me exactly what I wanted. It did it in about 1 minute. And again, it probably would have taken me hours on my own to accomplish the same task. If you wanted to see it, the Python code that actually did the normalization, they actually provide it for you. I don't program and I don't understand Python, so it doesn't mean anything to me. But if there's any Python programmers out there, you can take a look at their code. And then I thought, well, it could have been even simpler in the instructions. So there was my original instructions that I fed it. And I could have actually just told it, normalize phone column. So all phone numbers are formatted like number, 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 dash, number, 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 dash, number, 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 number. If there's no area code, assume area code 613. If there's no phone number, leave the cell blank. So it has basic assumptions that it can make about, well, what do I mean by area code and things like that, which in my previous iteration, I didn't know if the AI would actually understand You know, what do you mean by area code? I don't understand that. Well, this one, I just told it, you know, phone numbers and area codes, and it did it perfectly first time. So I was quite impressed with what they could actually do. As a wrap up, it can actually do an awful lot more. So this is straight off their website. You know, you can ask natural language questions, insights without complex formulas, where you can just ask plain text questions and have it figure out what needs to be done to answer that. You can write and execute Python, SQL, JavaScript directly in spreadsheet cells. If you wanted to generate tables and pivot tables and charts and things like that, you just tell it, I want a chart that visualizes the data in the following way. It can connect to all kinds of database backends. It does have what they call enhanced performance. So it uses WebGL and Rust to handle large data sets. SQL generation, no problem for real-time collaboration. You can actually, I think that's a paid feature for that, real-time collaboration. You can actually have teams work together in real time on a spreadsheet. So that's it for what I found with Quadratic. I highly recommend it. If anybody has any complex work they want to do in Excel, try it out. It's free.
So Elizabeth's asking, I guess a non-numeric, non-hyphen character would be ignored, or would it stop the Python process? Just wondering.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't throw anything at it that it couldn't handle. So it would be interesting. You try it. Just, you know, go on and set up some data the way you think it might stump it and see what it does, and then see if you can correct it with just a, you know, an updated prompt and just say, oh, handle this special case and see what it does.
Not being very fair, though, putting alphabetic characters in a phone number.
Well, do your taxes automatically.
That'd be handy. I see Jocelyn says, will it work with other programs such as LibreOffice or Google Docs? I don't know. It basically is a drag and drop operation. So certainly with Excel, you can just drag and drop an Excel spreadsheet into the program, and it will import it that way. I'm not sure if it'll handle LibreOffice or Google Docs. A little bit more complex, I think, but maybe not. If you just selected all the cells, and then dragged and dropped them in. Might work, I don't know.
I would think LibreOffice would work because that is basically Excel compatible.
Yeah. I would think so. But, you know, I don't know if it understands the native format for it, the open document format, but you can give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty cool program. I was much, much impressed.
Okay, thanks. Graham wants to know if there are privacy concerns if you have confidential data.
Yeah, of course. Anything that you decide you want to upload somewhere, you know, there's always the potential there for abuse. You have to decide whether there's risks that you don't want to undertake on there. I think that they did have some statements about how they do handle your data, but I can't remember what they were.
You're uploading data to the internet. Not terribly private, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Last week, I think, we had a little bit of conversation about repairing Windows, and in particular using this DISM command. And if you want to know more about it, here's a video from Ask Leo. He has some really good tutorials, and this one, again, is pretty good in terms of explaining what DISM does and how to actually use it. It's only 7 minutes, I think. If you're at all interested in how to repair Windows, system files, and so forth, and check out this video, it's well worth it. And talking about YouTube videos, I guess we had a question, Chris.
Yes, so this came into suggestion box at opcug.ca, so reminder, if you have any questions or shares you want to make, send it into that email address and we'll add it to the deck. So this question came in asking about messaging apps and that promise encrypting a message, and you know, the idea behind it is that nobody but the sender or the receiver can access the data, whether it's text data, a video stream, or an audio stream. It's all the same idea behind it, is that the data is end-to-end encrypted, where only the people at each end will actually be able to decrypt the data. And so, nobody can do it, not the service provider, not law enforcement, nobody can actually do it. And then the question really comes down to, are they really secure? And so I did a little bit of hunting around on it, and I found a couple of, the person who sent this in had come up with these two YouTube videos that had talked a little bit about it. And so anybody who is interested in knowing, are these really secure or not, they're probably pretty good videos to actually watch, and because it does go into this person's assessment as to whether they think that they're really secure or not. And that's all we have for that share, and thank you for the person who sent in that information.
And Carol's asking, what's Signal?
Signal is a messaging app, so it's in the news all the last couple of days, for sure.
Yeah, I was making a joke. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Oh, you're asking if it's really secure.
It's really secure until you just invite anybody at all to join in your Signal messages.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Okay. In response to my message on the forum that we were a bit light on content, Bob Harris decided he would tell us something about an update he's made to his machine and how it's helping him backup. And it's really very pertinent because, as you see in the slide here, March the 31st, as well as being the end of our special membership offer, people, and it's also World Backup Day. And the tagline for that is, don't be an April Fool. So the idea is you need to back up everything on March the 31st so nothing bad can happen on April the 1st and beyond. So we're going to talk a bit about backup in the next two or three topics. And I just want to start off by just noting that there are basically three main components of your computing system. You have the actual operating system, which will be Windows or Linux or whatever, plus any up-to-date patches that have been applied to your operating system. You have a number of applications which came with the OS, if it was Windows, and also applications that you have installed. And again, those applications over the years have probably been updated. And then the third thing is your data files, the files that you have created, like word processing documents, digital photographs, music, videos, all of those things that are yours and don't exist anywhere else. So these three things basically break up into two groups, the operating system and the applications. You can always reinstall those from the source. You can reinstall Windows, you can reinstall LibreOffice, you can reinstall PatchMyPC. But because your data files are yours and yours alone, they don't exist anywhere else. So you can't download them from the internet and, you know, recover your data files. So you have to have a backup of at least your data files. And Bob is going to tell us all about how he backs up his data files. So, Bob, over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much. Okay. So, I'm Bob Harris, and I'd like to share with you how I installed my, how I supercharged my desktop PC with a new 2 terabyte solid-state hard drive. And, up in the slides. There we go. And also share how I back up my files, too. And I'd like to mention that this is how I do it. It's not an instructional presentation. It's just what works for me. And our policy here is share what you do, and I'm sharing what I do. So I bought my computer about 5 years ago, And a little slow on the, this means up on the button slowly. Okay, I got my computer, but 5 years ago, since that time I upgraded from Windows 10 to Windows 11. Originally it came with 16 gigabytes of RAM. I upgraded that to 32. As Alan mentioned, I have my Windows system on a 500 gigabyte solid state drive, a C drive, and I have my data on a 1 terabyte hard disk, a spinning hard disk. And a little slow.
Yeah.
I might try spacebar. Does it work with the bent slides?
No, I don't think so.
It might. I don't know. Okay, well, anyway, thank you. Anyway, so my solution for quick and easy backups is my new high-capacity 2-terabyte internal solid-state drive. I'd like to show you, installing a drive like this is easier than you think. Okay, so this is the task we have at hand. So let's get started. Putting this drive in this computer. Get started here. And before we start, when you're working inside a desktop PC, there are a couple of things you should remember. Your data should be backed up first. Unplug the computer and the power cord comes off. I haven't got an anti-static wrist strap, but I like to keep one hand always touching the unpainted metal cabinet case to avoid static discharge. Don't handle components by the pins or hold parts by the edges, not the pins. And don't work on a carpeted area that has more static electricity. So the cover's removed here. And this is the solid state drive we want to install in this desktop computer right there. And if you aren't sure what all these parts are, you can upload your cell phone photograph to Gemini and give me a list of all the visible parts in the computer. And I tried that, and it gave me a flood of stuff. It would have filled 4 or 5 slides, so I just put some things on here. But it was complete. It mentioned the cables, the bays. It even said it's sitting. It was even sitting on a.
Okay, let me get you out. Okay, we have to go out. Okay.
Go ahead, Bob. I muted her.
Okay, thank you. Okay, give me all the components on here, and it even said it's sitting on a cutting mat for a work surface, which it certainly was. So very perceptive. I might add also, when I was installing this hard drive, solid-state drive, I asked AI to make me a 2-page instruction manual, and I printed that out for my computer, and I had a hard copy while the computer was down, and I followed that for this process, but it was quite easy. So anyway, we have that done here. So we my computer we have here right now, we have 2 drive bays. So the top right, we have a 2.5-inch bay, a smaller drive bay. That's for smaller solid-state drives. We have a 3.5-inch drive in the bottom for usually the larger spinning drives. And we don't need screws or tools. We simply use a 2.5-inch drive caddy. And while we're in here, on the left-hand side, you'll see a power supply. We have here a 500-watt power supply, so adding extra components here is not a problem. This PC did cost a little more up front, but it saved me a lot of money in the long run. At this point, I have no intention of replacing it. I'm hoping it'll last for many years to come. There we go. So we snap the solid-state drive into the drive caddy, and then we slide everything right into the drive bay. Before we slide the thing all the way in, we attach a power cable and a SATA cable. And these were already in my computer. They were already available. If you don't have these available, you can buy what's called a Y connector to split one cable into two, if you're stuck for space there. And then don't leave any cables hanging around loose where the fan's going to get caught. on the outside of my drive bay. I tucked both cables into a provided little metal clip, and that was very easy to do. If you haven't got one of those, use a wire tie or a tie wrap. Okay, we're almost done here. Before you finish and put things back together, you may want to blow things off a little bit. A can of compressed air works very well if you use light, short bursts. Don't go crazy. If you spray too much in one spot, it'll freeze things. And once again, I haven't got an anti-static wrist strap, so when I'm holding the can and working on the computer, I always have one hand touching the bare metal cabinet to avoid any sparks. Okay, so now we have my supercharged PC. Now has a third drive, a 2 terabyte internal solid state drive. I mentioned earlier, I'd show you how I back things up. So let's get involved in that right now.
Actually, just before you leave that, we did have a question. How expensive was your 2 terabyte SSD?
I've had it now. I bought it last fall. About $200.
Okay. Where did you buy it?
At Best Buy.
Best Buy. Okay.
Yep. And I shopped it out again with AI, put my specs in the computer in AI, and gave me some advice, and I weighed that out. And I've sort of forgotten how I got there. But I've had it lying around for a while, and finally got it installed. But
okay, yeah. That's all the questions in the chat, so carry on.
That's contemporary, thank you. Very good. And so we got this installed here now, and so I have a very simple strategy. It's simple and intentional. And first of all, I've never liked those long directory file name locations, C users / my name / app data and stuff. I've never, ever liked those things. They're too scattered and messy. I could never find the darn files. It caused me frustration. Since those kind of things came out, I've never, ever used those. And that's the way I do things. That's different, I guess. I find they're a bit of a hassle, and I don't use those. So I go to extra work to put them in a different spot. So at one time, I kept all my files in a separate folder. For many years now, I have my files in a separate folder on a separate drive. I've had this practice at work and at home. All my files are under the files directory. I have one folder called files. Under that folder, I have over 200 subfolders, and I have subfolders, names that mean something to me. I can find things quite readily, and I have 700 plus gigabytes. I could probably delete a third of that easily, but I never have. I carry it over, and not a big deal. So they're all in my files are all in one folder, and I think the viruses tend to go to the default locations. Mine are in something different, so I find that part to be unique. So, to back things up, it's very simple. Now, I've put my primary backup is just go from the D files to the E files. So I simply copy the D files to the E files. I have one folder to copy. It's so simple, and I like doing it that way. Now, here. A little while back, Alan German recommended a program called Free File Sync. Well, thank you, Alan. This is an amazing tool. The first sync takes a little bit of time, but syncs after that are incredibly fast. It makes daily backups painless and simple. You can often do two or three a day. It takes like seconds to do a backup. This is an internal backup to the primary drive. So here, a little hard to see here. This is free file sync. It's going to sync the D drive over to the E drive. My D drive is an internal spinning disk, and the E drive is the internal solid state drive. It's copying all my files, but there's 200 directories over in the same one, and that takes mere seconds. I like doing that. It's simple. And next page here. Good. Now, for secondary off-site backup, Free File Sync will synchronize my E drive to what I call, it's labeled officially as the F drive. This is also virtually instant. because it only syncs up the differences. So the first one might take a little time, but it just does the differences. And I have another drive and a couple of those, and that's my off-site backups too. Even if they have a fairly substantial here, it only takes minutes, and my external drives are really super, super slow. But it works really well. And I have different copies of my files. I like the fact that I can go and see any file. I can pick a file, go and see it. Rarely, I might go and pull one file from another drive intentionally. I can see it. I know where it is. I can live with that. So every hard drive eventually fails. Are you ready? Now, I do welcome comments, but first, I'd like to see what Alan German has to offer, something similar. So I'll pass things over to Alan right now. Thank you.
Before you do that, though, Bob, there are a couple of questions here. One was, are any files encrypted or password protected?
Yes.
And Free File Sync doesn't mind, it just backs them up?
No, it's not a problem at all. Yep. Yes.
And the other
I can get them on the other drive. Yep.
Whether you add a date to your copy to make versions.
Well, I've what I often do is use the Windows Explorer, and I'll print the little label, and I'll use I have a glue stick in my desk here, a little glue stick here. I'll make a little label up. I love graphics, and I'll tack that on to the actual date, because File Explorer gives you the file properties of the F drive or the whatever drive it is, and I put that onto the drive, put it inside. I have one over here right now. This is an external backup, and it's in here, and I'll see the I wasn't planning to do this, but there we go. And you probably can't see this, but the last time round, I didn't bother reprinting a new label. I put a new magic marker on there and put a new date on that. Maybe you can't really see that. But anyway, that's one external I have for a backup, and I have more than one of those. That's
hey, Bob.
Very good.
So
thank you all.
You want to see my backup strategy, so here it comes. Okay, so I basically have a very similar system to Bob's. I have a hard drive that's got two operating system partitions. So one partition is running Windows and the other partition is running Linux. And there's a third partition on there, which is my data drive. So in Windows, that data partition shows up as drive D. So drive C with the operating system, drive D is the data. And in Linux, they don't use letters, so it shows up as a mount point media/data disk. So I think of drive D and data disk, that's the exact same location on the hard drive, and Windows and Linux can both access the same, exactly the same files. And as Bob was saying, to back up my data files, I only have to back up drive D, and I have everything that's on my data drive. However, I do have a more robust approach. Typically, I will make monthly full disk image backups. So a full disk image backup is a essentially bit-for-bit copy of the entire hard drive. So everything, the operating system, the applications, the configurations, the data, and all the applications and their patches and updates, everything that's on the hard drive is written to one file with a date and then stored on an external USB drive. So that's a monthly exercise. The worst case scenario, if my computer dies, I can always get back to this status that was basically a month ago, and all I have to do is run Windows Update, Linux Update, and refresh the data file, the data directory, and basically I'm back up to date just before the crash, I guess. On my Linux box, which I use almost every day, I have a program, a Linux program this time. It's called Back in Time, and it does incremental backups of my data partition. And it will do it every time I boot the machine. It creates a dated backup, incremental backup of the data files and folders. So that's one of the reasons in the chat where I said I don't use versioning in Free File Sync, because I have essentially Back in Time is creating multiple versions of all my data files over a series of dates. And there are multiple versions of this thing stored on my backup drive. And then the final thing I do is, just like Bob was saying, I use Free File Sync. And every time I close down the computer, or just before I close down the computer, I will plug in a flash drive and run Free File Sync, just like Bob was saying. And it basically updates my backup on the flash drive to be exactly the same as the files on the current drive. So again, it's an incremental type system. It only copies the new files and the edited files and deletes the deleted files. So it's a very fast operation. So those are the three things that I do. So let's just take a quick look at FoxClone. I talked about FoxClone previously. It's an open source program. And it's kind of neat because it runs off a live distro. So you download the ISO file, burn it to a USB, and create a bootable USB. And then what you're doing is essentially running Ubuntu Linux. And it's essentially a graphical user interface for the PartClone program. And it supports both the old master boot record disk format and the GPT, the newer GPT. Disk system, and it also will support EXT4, which is the basic Linux file system, NTFS, which is Windows, and FAT32, which is another Windows type or USB type file system. So basically, you create this USB, you put the thing in the computer, you boot the computer, and tell it to boot from the USB. And oops, when you do that, you get this really scary Linux desktop. It looks just like Windows. There's a desktop, there's a taskbar, there's a bunch of icons, and you notice on the left there is an icon for FoxClone. You double-click that icon, then it will load the main window. It goes out and it reads all of the disks that are on your system. The top two windows here are the source of your backup. So you can choose, you can see here, I've chosen my 250 gig solid state drive. By default, it wants to back up all of the partitions. Remember, I'm doing a full disk image backup, so I want all of the partitions. And then down here, we want the target drive. So here I'm pointing to an external USB drive. Interestingly, it thinks it's 32 terabytes. It's actually only 4 terabytes, so I don't know why that is. But then once you do that, then you can you choose the MyBook external USB. It pops up this file manager, and you can drill down to MyBook and Z images and FoxClone. And then by default, it's going to choose today's date or the date when I made the backup as the kind of baseline file name for the files that it makes. And if you want to do a restore of the hard drive, it's basically the reverse of that process. You select the image from the backup and tell it to write it out to the 250 gig solid state. And the neat thing about it is you don't have to do all the partitions. I could just restore Linux, for example. So if I blow my Linux system up, I just restore that Linux partition, takes about 2 minutes, and I'm back in business. Back in Time is only a Linux program,
Actually, before you move on from FoxClone, Steve asks about backing up drive partitions, and do you know if it handles BTRFS partitions?
I don't believe it does. I think the version that's available right now is still limited to EXT4. It's a open source program, so it's a work in progress. I would imagine it'll get to ButcherFS eventually, but I don't think it supports it right now.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so back in time. Again, it's an open source program. This time it's using a utility called rsync, which is very much like FreeFile Sync. It does incremental backups. There's a GUI which I use. It does scheduling, and it will handle both local and remote storage. And basically the first time you run it, you have to set it up. So you create this profile, and you tell it where you want to store your snapshots to, your backup. I'm putting it on a 64 gig SD card, and I'm telling it to schedule it at every time I boot the computer, then create one of these incremental snapshots. So this is fully automatic. You can tell it what you want to include, what you want to exclude, what kind of retention period you want for your backups, and various options. And the way it works is, so here you can see the main screen. If I run the program manually, got a bunch of snapshots here, and I can drill down into any particular folder within that system. So, for example, we're somewhere in March here. This is March the 4th. So let's say that I've been working on this Python script file here, and I've been working on a really complicated piece of code, and I really screwed up my current version. So I go back to February the 28th. I go to my data disk folder and find the hoodhype.py file, and I'm going to tell it to restore that. I'm going to restore this version from February the 28th, it should be. So I'm going to restore that file. And when I do that, it asks me if I want to create a backup. And the original file, which was on the data disk, has been renamed to hoodhype.py.backup. And then this is March the 4th. So the original file, which I screwed up, has been renamed to this backup just in case. And the February version has been restored as the original hoodhype.py script file. So it's a really easy way to create incremental backups, multiple versions over multiple days, weeks, months, and very easy to restore any individual file. And then the final thing, I talked about doing this manual snapshot with FreeFile Sync. You know that it's cross-platform. There's a Windows version and there's a Linux version. It's open source, so you want to get the program code, you can. And even if you're a Mac user, you can still use FreeFile Sync. And Bob gave a really good explanation of how this thing works. And so here's an example where I'm running it, my D drive, my dedicated data partition on the hard drive, to a flash drive, which I've named to be Drive U. And you notice that it's only pulling out files which have been, some of these have been updated, and then here's a new one that came in. So all of the new material is being copied from my hard drive to my backup. So that's my system, full image backups, incremental daily backups, and individual snapshots to have a really, really current version of my data files. Okay, that's it for me. So Chris is now going to tell you all about why you should be backing up.
Yeah, so this is a whirlwind tour. I do an hour and a half presentation called Whoa Backup, which covers all of this. So this is just going to hit some of the highlights on it. Keep in mind that we don't back up for backup's sake. We back up so we can recover. So make sure you're backing up what you need to back up, and make sure that you're actually able to recover it rather than just endlessly making backups without testing any of your processes. And so you have to think about what could lead to data loss for you. What are your risks? What are you trying to mitigate against? And come on. So you have to do the planning. Plan ahead so that you know you're going to be able to recover what you need to be able to recover. Well, the clicks aren't going through very well. Okay, so what's on your computer? You have your operating system. Well, you can reinstall the operating system if you have a disaster, hard disk failure, and you replace the hard disk. But do you really want to manually do that? You can, but do you want to do that? Your programs. You can reinstall the programs in the event of a disaster that you had to reinstall everything. But do you have all the programs you need to reinstall? Do you have the license keys for them? And do you want to actually do all of that manually? And then use your data files, as Alan mentioned. You know, nobody else has copies of those. So do you have copies of all your important data files? Can you recover them in the event of any sort of disaster that is, you know, possible or likely to occur in your particular circumstance? Do you know where all your data files are? A lot of programs on your computer will squirrel away either configuration data or actual data files into very obscure locations that you may not realize the programs are actually storing your important data, such as my photo catalog of all the photo edits on all my photos for years and years and years. It's not under photos. It's not under documents. Where Thunderbird stores its mail is not under documents. So know where your important data files actually are. So the backup approaches, there's a file-level backup, which has already been talked about as well, and then which can be done either local or in the cloud, and I'll talk briefly about that, or you can do imaging on your computer. So if you want to just back up your data files, sure, you can do that. Your data files are what's really important because nobody else has copies of those files. But again, do you back up all your files? There are two excellent programs for file-level backup, I think. File History, which is built into Windows 10 and 11. A little bit lobotomized in Windows 11, but it's still functional. And then there's Freeze File Sync, which has actually been covered quite admirably already tonight. So if you want to use File History, you get near real-time backup. It can be every 10 minutes that it'll monitor for new or changed files. It defaults to most of the folders that are underneath your profile, so it will catch things like documents, pictures, desktop, videos, and so forth. And you can add additional locations on different drives or different folders on the C drive, and you can have that as frequently as every 10 minutes. You'll also get version backup. So potentially you can save years worth of files, versions of files, and be able to get those back if you need them. It does not easily provide for offsite backup, which I think is critical. So the initial setup under Windows 10 and 11, the places you go to do it are listed there. And then for the details on the file history configuration, you really don't want to have the defaults almost certainly. So make sure that you actually go and customize it to suit your particular needs. And there's a YouTube video which gives really good information on it because it was me giving my wool backup presentation for the APCUG. And at 1554 in that video, there's some information about setting up the configuration of file history. So if you want to recover files, that's the beautiful thing about file history. It makes it really, really simple. You just right-click on a file in File Explorer, choose Properties, and then you go to the Versions tab, and it lists all of the previous versions that you actually have saved or file history is saved on your behalf, and then you can just recover them. And you can restore it, overwriting the current copy of the file there, or you can restore it to if you want to restore it to a different location so that you maintain your current file as well as the restored file. Lots more details in that video on using file history and how you can do recovery of deleted files and all kinds of configuration options on it. So for file-level backup, Free File Sync is a great program. It's been covered quite well by Bob Nallen in here. It provides all of the capabilities that file history gives you. A little bit more difficult to set up. It does give you easily, much more easily than file history, the ability to do off-site backup using the program. So very handy for that. It is a solution, I think, for if, or more likely when, Microsoft removes file history. I really think they're going to deprecate it at some point, and at some point they're actually going to remove it from Windows. It's a guess on my part, but I think it's a pretty educated guess. I did paste into the chat. I had Q&As that I did over a four-week period where I talked about using Free File Sync as a replacement for file history and how to set it up, including versioning and all the whole shebang.
Question, does Free File Sync, you said it supports external backup. Does that include like FTP to a foreign site or something like that?
Yes, you can use Free File Sync with FTP, as well as you can use it for Google Drive or OneDrive. You can use it there as well, which a lot of file synchronization type programs don't understand how to do. OneDrive and Google Drive, so it supports those as well. But yeah, FTP as well, not a problem. So next I'll talk about image backup, and this comes to that other thing of, like, do you really want to reinstall an operating system? Do you really want to reinstall all your programs? Do you really want to worry about, do you save the configuration of your programs and that data that got squirreled away in some place you didn't even realize it? So it's really great for disaster recovery, because it'll recover everything, your operating system, your programs, your data, your customizations, everything all at once. You can also use it to do file recovery, so you can recover individual files and folders out of the backup sets as well. It does provide for offsite backup, because you just do an image backup to an external hard drive that you then plug from your computer and store it somewhere else. So that gives you protection for those rarer dangers such as fire, theft, and things like that. So some free options for imaging. I wrote an article a number of years back on doing backup, and let me just I'll paste that in a moment into the chat. So if you want to look at what I was looking at a number of years ago for features that I wanted in an image backup program, I wrote an article and I actually looked at four different programs. Only three of them still have free versions, so the three that I have in the article that are still available as free versions, EaseUS to do backup, Paragon Backup and Recovery, and AOME Backupper. So each of them had their own nuances, and so you could read that article and see if any of those match your criteria for backup. So just a really quick tour of going through and using EaseUS to do backup. You go into the program, you just click on the button to add backup. You can rename the job if you want to make it something other than new backup. You choose what it is you want to backup. So you choose disk, and then you go, it'll show you all the disks on your system and all the partitions. You can select the entire disk, or you can select just individual partitions if you want. You click on OK, and then you select the disk where you want your backups to be stored. So that'll be probably an external hard drive or something like that you got plugged into your computer. And then you can choose whether you want to back up to a local drive, which most people are going to want, or you can do it to EaseUS Cloud, which is going to cost you money in the long run, or network attached storage or some things like that. Most people, it'll be local drive. You just select the drive you want to store your backups onto and where on that drive you want to store it. And then there are lots of options. If you go in, you can select the type of backup you want, whether it's full or incremental or differential. You can set up scheduling. Very, very flexible. You can have it like every second Tuesday of the month, or you can do it every night at 1:30 in the morning, or you can do it when your computer starts up or when you're shutting down, or all kinds of things you can trigger it on. You can encrypt the backup file so that if you are doing offsite backup, I highly recommend that you either do full disk encryption where everything on that drive is encrypted, or you encrypt the backup so that if it gets stolen or misplaced or whatever, nobody can get access to your backup data. And then you start the backup. And for recovery, you basically just go into the program again. You select the backup job that you want to recover from. And then you click Recover. And then you can either recover entire partitions, or you can do individual files or folders. And then if you have multiple backups, like if multiple full backups or incrementals that were created under that backup job, you can go in, you can select the exact date that the backup was run that you want to recover from. And away you go. Very important, create the emergency recovery disk that the program allows you to do. And again, that's in that video that I gave on the whole WoW backup. So this portion is at 40 minutes, 25 seconds into that particular video. And make sure that you not only create the emergency recovery disk, but you also can make sure you can actually boot from that recovery disk and access your backup files. Again, we don't backup for backup's sake. We backup so we can recover. So make sure you have the ability to recover.
Chris, before you go on, Nicola's asking, if you have a dual drive, solid state and a spinning hard drive, can you do one image backup to include both? Is that better than doing each separately?
You can do both. I don't think fundamentally one is better than the other. I look at this because it's, for me, the image backup is really my disaster recovery. So I want it easy to do the backups, and I don't care if it takes a little bit longer to do recovery. So quite frankly, I would just do the backup, including all of the things you want to backup, all drives, all partitions that you want. And then if you do need to do recovery, if you only need to recover one of the partitions or one of the drives, you can select that on the recovery process where you can say, oh, I don't want to recover everything. I just want to recover this particular drive. So that's the approach that I would take because, again, it makes it easier on the backup side that you just have one backup file each time it runs, and you don't have to worry about multiple files that get created and so forth. But it is your choice. You can do it either way.
Can I just jump in? I've got
sure.
to add to that too. Yeah, what I do is I just image the system files as an image because you don't need to image your data files. You can just copy them over. But if you want to make it bootable, you have to have an image in order to be able to transfer it to make it bootable. So if you just take your files and you copy them over, it's not going to be bootable.
Yeah. My take on it is because it's disaster recovery is what I'm primarily doing imaging backup for, I want to just do everything all in one thing. And I don't want to have to do a recovery on just my operating system and then do a separate recovery to get all my data files back. If I'm in a disaster situation where my hard drive died, everything is gone. I just want to get everything back in one operation, and it just simplifies it. I also do file level backup, so I do use file history, I do use free file sync, and I do use cloud backup as well for just file recovery. But for me, my pea brain, the way it works, I find it easiest to just image absolutely everything and all to a single operation once a day. But, again, this is the sort of thing you have to think about what works for you, what is important for you, and if it works for you to back up data separately from the operating system and programs and things like that, hey, fill your boots. Just know what it is you're trying to recover from or the risk you're trying to mitigate, and then make sure that whatever you choose will mitigate those risks to the level that you're comfortable with. Anything else that is in the chat there, Alan?
I think that's it.
Okay, so let's go on and talk a little bit about cloud backup. So again, cloud backup can be at least a partial solution because, again, it's your data files that's really most important. So backing up your data files to the cloud is a viable option if you've got enough space. So Google Drive will give you 15 gigabytes for free per Google account. So if you actually create multiple Google accounts, each of them can have 15 gigabytes of free space. You know, you can do it this way. And they may provide real-time backup as well as file versioning, especially, for the real-time backup, almost certainly they're going to require an app to be installed on your computer that takes care of monitoring for new files and then synchronizing between the cloud and your computer automatically. And it'll take care of versioning automatically on the cloud because when you copy up a file that is the same name, all of the cloud providers I know of, certainly Google Drive and OneDrive, they will automatically keep versions of old files, but only for a month. But if you wanted to go back to an older version, you at least have a month's worth that you can go back to. It gives you the benefit of being able to access data files from anywhere in the world, which is kind of nice. And it gives you the ability to share files with anybody in the world, which can be really nice, especially if you want to, you know, share a 100 gigabyte file or something like that. You can actually do it through a cloud, whereas, you know, you couldn't do it through email or things like that. Even a gigabyte file is awfully awkward to share any other way. And it gives you off-site protection against things like fire, theft, and tornadoes. So choose a provider that has an app that will allow you to do that automatic synchronization between the cloud and the and your computer. I highly, highly recommend that because it's awfully easy to forget to do things, whereas if you have an app that is just automatically monitoring and synchronizing the files, then you're off to the races all the time. So it will enable that real-time backup and the file versioning. Free space that you get from any of these cloud providers may be not enough for all your files. So what do you use it for? Use it for your most important files, you know, files that you need to share with other people, files that you need to be able to access when you're on vacation or when you're at another location or anything like that. Those are the files that you really want to share. I have 15 gigabyte free space on Google Drive. I use about 7 gigs, and I have all my really important files are there. Make sure that you have a backup solution for the other files on your computer because they're important as well. Maybe not critical, but they're important. So some of the pros and cons of the different ways of doing backup. For file-level backup, the pros, I think, are it's the most important stuff. So it's your data files that nobody else has copies of that are the most important. You may be able to get real-time backup and file versioning, depending on the solution that you choose. You may be able to recover files that are from many, many years ago through that file versioning. And it gives you quick and easy recovery of individual files and folders. And if you plan correctly, you can get off-site backup as well. Again, file history doesn't allow easy access to off-site backup. It expects to backup to a single drive that is connected to your computer all the time. But there are other solutions like Free File Sync, which will help you in that regard. The cons may not back up all your data if you don't know where all your data is backed up. And it doesn't back up the operating system, the programs, and the customizations to the programs. And disaster recovery then can become very tedious because you might have to manually install the operating system, manually install all your data programs before you can recover your data from your backup. Image backup, I think the pros, complete disaster recovery is the big thing for image backup. That's its biggest strength, is that if you have a hard disk failure, you can get back everything that was on that hard drive at the point in time when that backup started running. So it'll recover the operating system, programs, customizations, everything. And you can have that offsite backup. It just image it to a backup drive that you then disconnect from your computer. The cons, they do take a lot of space for the backups of image backups. They typically is about 80% for when you're talking about operating system drive and your programs and your data, typically you'll get an image backup that'll be about 80% of the size of your original file set. So it can be really big. Now, incrementals can be really small, and so there are ways of mitigating that a little bit, and I talk about that in my WoW backup presentation at some length. It can be a little bit more tedious to recover individual files and folders than other file-level backup solutions that you might have. It's doable. It's just a little bit more time-consuming to actually do that. Cloud backup, I think the pros are that you get off-site protection. So that's really nice. It gives you the ability to share files with other people without opening up your computer to the world. And it allows you to access all of your important files from anywhere in the world, whether you're on vacation or at a friend's house or whatever. The cons, it is somebody else's computer. What if they go out of business? I'm not worried about Microsoft going out of business with OneDrive or Google going out of business with Google Drive, but what about Box? I don't know what their business plan is. I don't know how solvent they are. I may wake up one day if I'm using that for my cloud backup and all my files are gone, you know, that are in the backup. Mitigation for that is nothing unique gets stored in the cloud. Okay. Limited space if you're looking at free. If you're willing to pay money, you have basically unlimited space is available for you for sure. But if you are going for free, which I typically try to do, you may not be able to back up all your important files, and you have to pick and choose. Disaster recovery can be tedious from the cloud. Again, you have to back up get your operating system back, your programs are back, and then you can recover all your files from the cloud. And I think that's it.
Okay, thanks, Chris. We're over the magic time, so I'm going to skip through a couple of questions here. We'll come back to those next week. We don't have time for any other questions, so wrapping up, I remind you about the library presentations, a couple coming up, basic photo editing from Linda on the 27th, and quick PC tips on March 31st. But everything's happening on March 31st. At Blackburn Hamlet from Chris. Just a reminder that if you're not a member, if you know somebody who wants to be a member, they've got a few days for the special offer, 2 membership years for the price of 1 membership fee, $20, good until March 31st. And I remind you, if you are a member, don't send us any money because the board has already decided it will extend everybody's membership expiry date by an extra year and not charge you for the privilege. And then finally, our next Q&A session will be next Wednesday, April the 2nd. We have a couple of questions already in the pipe, obviously. And if you have any other questions, or if you've got things that you'd like to share, like Bob Harris's backup and installing SSDs, anything like that you want to share, just send us a note. And we'll be happy to include you in the next presentations. And finally, just remind you, if you want to try Jitsi, then go to this URL in a few minutes, and hopefully you'll see everybody's smiling face on your computer screen. So that's it for me. Thanks, everyone, for attending. Thank you, Bob, for a great presentation, and Chris for all that great information. So we'll see you next week.
Okay, and I just pasted it into the chat as well. If people want to pick it up, the post-Q&A Jitsi session, you could just click the link in the chat window. So thanks all for showing up, and have a good week. And I won't see you next week because I'm giving an APC UG presentation next Wednesday night, but I'm sure that Alan can handle things admirably in my absence, and I think he's going to call upon Bob Harris to co-host it with him.